ओमज्ञान्तिमिनन्दस्य ज्ञानाञ्जलशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरुवे नमः। जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्या प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतकदाधार श्रीवासवि गौरभक्तवृन्द। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। ओके, सो चिंतामणि माता जी शी हैड अ क्वेश्चन एंड सो विनीता माता जी यू ऑल्सो हैव some question.
Actually, yes, Prabhuji, means, I don't know if it is related to our class or not, since I mean, I heard last year, week's recording that was about ghosts and that thing.
Mm-hmm.
So if ghosts are there, so if Prabhuji, that black magic and voodoo, this magic, these also affect so much that anyone can any soul leave the body? Does these magic effects are so?
Yeah, I mean, certain tantric things are there in the Shastra, so they are bona fide. And
when the such soul leave the body, so that also roam in like as a ghost without body?
See, ghost body is because you commit suicide, that's why you attain. Or
yeah,
someone
yeah.
would not like to be in a gross body. So, yeah, I don't think that if someone is using black magic, then the person might attain the ghostly body. So I don't know much about black magic and all, how much it can influence. But I think it is given the tantric scriptures, they talk about all these things. And
because of that magic only, that effect of that magic, the soul left that body. Maybe their soul have more time to live in that body, but because
That is not same as suicide, no? Because some external factor has caused the death of that person. Karma can change, you know, that is possible. Like, you know, even when you commit aparadh to anyone, Vaishnavas, you know, then also karma will change. Like, generally it is mentioned in the Shastra that anyone who offends devotees, their life is reduced, they lose their wealth, and they will lose their opulence, they will lose their beauty also. Many things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, karma can easily be changed, you know. That is not a big thing. But it all depends on the will of the person. If the person himself wants to die before his fixed duration, then obviously that is suicide. So then obviously you will attain a ghostly body, but otherwise, you know, someone else can influence their karma, you know, if they have the power and potency, mystic siddhis, yogis. So like, you know, even yogis also in the Himalayas, so they also can, they can see us and they can also pray to our past, present, future. And they can also influence us to a certain degree. Like, you know, like, okay, one particular example is that of, now, during Bhaktivinoda Thakur time, we know of this Asura. Asura in the sense, you know, like he was acting like a demon. He wanted to become Vishnu. He was actually thinking himself as Vishnu. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur was strongly against him. So he was thinking, you know, that Jagannath is actually worshipped. But Jagannath, I am Jagannath. So why we have to worship that wooden form of the Lord? So he was discriminating between the deity and the Lord. And so Bhaktivinoda Thakur easily understood that this person is a bogus person. And he is just using some kind of mystic siddhis. Because he was calling himself as Vishnu, Mahavishnu. And he was also doing Raslila pastimes. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur easily understood. So now this, I think his name was Bishikane, something like that. So he employed black magic, he employed his mystic yogic siddhis powers against Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Because of that, Bhaktivinoda Thakur had to suffer miserably to the verge of death. He was about to die, and the entire family was about to die. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur's wife requested him that he should give up the idea of arresting this Bhishaken. So, but Bhaktivinoda Thakur, obviously, you know, being a pure devotee, he did not compromise with that. So, you know, he suffered a lot, but because he chanted the holy name, you know, he definitely came out of it. And then he went to the prison house, and somehow, you know, he understood that the yogic, he or I think one of the policemen, you know, he understood that generally people have their strength in their long hair. They have the yogic siddhis in the hair. So he just, you know, indicated and to cut his hair. So one jailkeeper, you know, from back, he went from the back side, and then he snatched his hair, and with a knife, with a scissor or something, you know, he cut off the hair of that Bhishaken. And then as soon as that happened, you know, he fell down unconscious, and then finally he died. So he lost all his yogic powers, and he died on the spot. So this is how, you know, like, you, yeah, I mean, these things are there, you know, like someone who is potent, who has power, they can also influence devotees, and devotees can also suffer through that. You know, they can also create some kind of influence on devotees' karma, and devotees, obviously, devotees are under the control of the Supreme Lord. So how much, you know, potency is, like, with how much potency they can influence a devotee, that is up to the Supreme Lord. But, you know, devotees can also get influenced by that, because we are not pure devotees. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is a Nitya Siddha. So whatever he suffered was obviously because of arrangement of the Lord. So Krishna sanctioned it, and that's why, so he wanted to show that how great my devotee is, you know. So he had to sanction that. But otherwise, you know, the holy name itself is so potent, you know, when Nitya Siddha devotee is the chant, the holy name, Maya cannot even touch that devotee. So no material influence can touch the devotee. Right? The holy name is all potent because it is not different from Krishna. So nothing can actually influence the holy name or the devotees who are chanting the holy name. But, you know, all these pastimes are conducted by Krishna just to glorify his devotees. In spite of so much pain, tolerance, they are still taking shelter of me. And still they are, you know, not going away from his service. They are more determined, in fact, to serve him. So this shows the glories of the devotee. And, you know, so these kind of siddhis, powers, they can influence. But, you know, for a devotee, ultimately it is up to the Lord how he takes that karma, how he arranges the karma. Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, so now.
The soul leaves the body, I think it's called Preta, no?
Huh?
Vedic, this thing, after the soul leaves, they call Pretatma, no? They call it Preta.
So you are saying that when the soul leaves the body, the Atma is called Pretatma?
It's a gross body, nahi hai na?
Ah, yeah.
Gross body nahi hai, so I think it is called Pretatma, Preta.
Gross body nahi hai, but subtle body is there, no?
नहीं सटल बॉडी इज देयर बट जो काम करते हैं श्राद्ध का तभी वो प्रेतात्मा करके ही बोलते हैं उसको
अच्छा वैसा इन श्राद्ध सेरेमनी दे से लाइक दैट जस्ट टू इन ऑर्डर टू डिस्टिंग्विश यू नो बिटवीन लाइव एंड डेड पर्सन ओके सो एनीवन एल्स हैज जॉइंड टिल नाउ
नो वन
No, I think Radhika Mataji is having problem in joining.
Okay, one second. Okay. Yeah, so Chintamani Mataji, what is your question about?
Prabhuji, I was just thinking in the terms of in those six exchanges that are given for between devotees, Pratigranati, Gihyam Akhyati, Pichati, Bhunte Bhujayate Chaiva. That is the one. Abhi, usme, one of the things is you open your heart to a person. Now, when you open your, what is this exactly like opening your heart? When you open your heart to a person, means you may be telling a lot of things to that person. Now, we are again having this problem of Vaishnava. Now, suppose a person is having some problems, either during a service or whatever it is. Usually, when you open your heart to someone, it is most of the time telling your problems. So, when you are going to naturally talk of problems, you are not going to talk about chairs and tables, you are going to talk of a person only. And when you are in a devotee, this thing, you are going to talk of some devotee only. So, does that tantamount to Vaishnava Prad? Now, a senior may also be talking about some junior. It, whatever it is, maybe not doing the service properly or may not be whatever it may be the reason. He may the senior may also be discussing with his peers certain problems. But when we discuss and try to find out a solution, does that tantamount to Vaishnava Prad? Is that criticism?
Okay, once again. Yeah, actually, it's
Like something, even in the school days and college days, if something is to happen to us, we would come and tell our mother, she would give us a solution, or she would tell us, don't worry, something. So if you sort of face some problems and you come and even tell it, discuss it with your family members, does it become Vaishnava Prad? Does it become criticism? Where is the fine line between trying to find a solution to the problem? And one is you just blaspheme, that is different. I'm trying to find out that when you do face such situations and if you try to find a solution to the problem, but then you have to tell somebody, does it tantamount to criticism? Does it tantamount to Vaishnava
Yeah, so this is very important consideration. I think, you know, devotees will act differently according to the level of advancement. One cannot imitate Mahabhagavat devotees. See, because what happens when we try
One thing is you
to.
tolerate.
No, but see, this is what I'm saying, that how much will you tolerate? Are you like Haridas Thakur? You can tolerate throughout your life. You cannot. So
Yes.
you have to be consistent in your behavior. See, the major drawback and major problem of following, you know, these things in spiritual life is we hear something very interesting, we hear something very high, and then we want to follow that immediately. We try to follow that immediately. But the problem is, let's say, for example, let's say, you know, I am living with my, you know, non-devotee family, And I am also living with my wife, who is a devotee, and I am also living with my, other friends or whoever it is, or other people around me. Now, let's say as a practicing devotee or as an idealistic devotee, I try to implement certain things, okay, theoretically. So let's say my mother, if she will complain to me about someone, some devotee, or, let's say, about myself or about my wife or, like XYZ.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
She will, let's say she will complain about it. And I will tell her that, no, we should not try to see fault. We should only see the good in others. Okay. I will tell her like that. After 2 days, the same person will behave wrongly with me. Okay. And I will get upset. And I will go to my mother and tell her that actually, you are right. This is how she is behaving. And or otherwise, I will tell her that, well, she is like this, she is like that. So then what do you expect? My mother, what would she will say? She will say that when I told, then you are saying that, we should see good in everyone. And now the same thing when it happened with you, you are coming and telling me that, this is a fault. So the problem is that devotees, they don't have consistent behavior. They try to imitate someone, but they are not having consistent behavior. So, initially we try to think that, okay, let's try to be humble, let's try to tolerate the situation. But I think it is very important to act realistically also. And the realistically meaning that, you have to take side of the, of the truth. You cannot take side of a devotee or a non-devotee also. That we have to understand. So now, let's say, for example, if my mother said something about my wife, and which is right, which is from, with something that I also notice in her, and others have also noticed about her. See, now all the devotees, they have their nature, right?
Yes.
So you cannot expect that devotee will be perfect. Obviously, devotee will be making mistakes. And actually, really speaking, a true devotee, or that, Prabhupada says that, a true devotee or a devotee is someone who is a gentleman, perfect gentleman, right? So when you are not a perfect gentleman, when you are not perfect in anything, there will be faults. So now I cannot tell her, if she's showing some kind of, anartha, then I cannot tell my mother that, okay, you please only focus on the good things and, she will improve. Or I will deny it. But later on, I will myself start talking about it, right? So that diplomatic behavior or consistent behavior has to, inconsistent behavior should be rejected. We have to be consistent, actually. And that is the reason when, we have to understand what is happening with us. If, the idea is, the philosophy is that if someone is criticizing you, then you tolerate. You don't, you have to tolerate as long as possible. In fact, the entire life you have to tolerate whatever other people speak about you. But when people speak about Vaishnavas, then we cannot tolerate. Okay, but yes. It does not mean that when we are showing the truth, that time also we say that, well, this person is a devotee, how can you say about her? Or, okay, we know internally that, okay, everyone, devotees are actually faultless, because the fire of Krishna consciousness will make them perfect at some point of time in the future. Okay. But let's deal with the current situation and the current problem. You cannot be artificial in your dealings. Okay. So you have to acknowledge and you have to accept that, yeah, this was wrong. Like, for example, if my parents will come to temple, and if one devotee does not behave nicely with them, or he behaves very rudely with them, then I cannot tell them that, well, I will not take the devotee side that time. I cannot tell my parents that, okay, it's okay, no problem. You know, it's coming from a devotee, take it as a blessing. I cannot tell them like that. Now, I would imagine myself in that situation. If I would have been there, would I have been taken as a blessing that the same thing happened with me? If I cannot take it as a blessing, how can I tell my parents or anyone else that take it as a blessing? So we cannot be hypocrites also. Okay. So we have to act according to our current stand, we have to identify and recognize that, you know, where we are at. We are also having an arthas, and we also get upset. If someone will chastise me without any reason, I will get upset. That is my nature. So work with your nature. You know, it's like try to see the tolerance, all these things. You know, that is for a devotee, you know, individual basis. So you have to try to improve on that. But you cannot expect that others will also behave in the same way. You know, and you know, it is very easy to see faults in everyone. You know, because the fault is there. It is not that, okay, nobody has, you know, nobody is perfect, like everyone is perfect. It's not like that. Everyone has fault, and that will also come out with time. So the idea is that, you know, there are different stages and categories of dealing, where, you know, initially, okay, the fault is there, the person is faulty, the fault is there, the fault you can see. But how you are reacting every time, if you are only focusing on the fault, then obviously that is not right, that is not good. See the good things also, you know, as a devotee. And then there is a stage where the fault is there, but you make a constant attempt to ignore the faults. And then the highest stage is that, you know, you can't see any faults only, which is Uttama Adhikari, obviously. You cannot imitate that stage. Now, even Uttama Adhikari can also take down, you know, the role of a guru, and he can chastise, he can see the faults in the disciple. So it also depends on the relationship. Between, you know, what relationship you have.
But when a guru chastises, it is not apparat. It is okay. It's for his betterment of...
See, it is... If the guru is a Nitya Siddha, if he is chastising, then definitely it is... It's a blessing. But if a guru is conditioned, and if he himself is actually judging, you know, then how can you say that it is a blessing? So it depends, you know, like, so... that's the reason, you know, we have different grades of devotees. The most advanced devotees, they are, you know, perfect in their demeanor. They are gentlemen. And, you know, so it all depends. So without any reason, if the guru is saying something, you know, or without any genuine reason, then obviously it's not the right for the guru to say, do like that. And, you know, then... Yeah, I mean, you know, many things will matter, you know. You know, if you are, okay, like you might be thinking that, okay, whatever the guru is doing is good for me, it's blessing for me. Okay, but you have to also hear from other sadhus whether the guru is acting, you know, in the right way, or he's, you know, many devotees have experienced bad things about him. If that is the case, then maybe something is wrong with the guru himself.
But then when I'm telling somebody, then doesn't it become aparadh? I'm talking against my guru?
Depends on what is your intention, what is your motivation. If you want to, if you think, you know, that you are quite right in your this thing, then you can share with some senior devotee or with your equal also. And but you have to present, you know, perfectly, things in a perfect way. Because what happens is, when we are sharing, we are only giving one-sided information. Why the guru is behaving like that, why he chastised me, that you are not saying, but you are only saying why he behaved like that with me. If you are giving one-sided information, then who is going to, like, then that is not fair. So, both sides, you know, so you have to be very honest. You have to be very sincere in your intentions.
Yeah, that your intentions have to be perfect. But then can you sort of tell somebody that, okay, such and such thing happened? Without harming that person.
With your guru, it's very rare, first of all, okay? Generally, disciples, they will accept guru's chastisement or, you know, as mercy, and obviously they realize it also. It's not that disciples won't realize it, because they know that, okay, they have committed a mistake, and they are, you know, so the guru has rightly chastised them, so they know about it. But in certain cases where you have not done anything, and you know, you are just unnecessarily getting some bombardment, then obviously you can discuss. You can discuss with, you know, senior devotees about it. or you know the guru's godbrothers, that this is how, you know, this is what happened. And see, we are talking about you know, not just taking, you know, one-sided approach here. We are also taking about in account the guru's mistake, you know, because it has happened in the past. It's too much over you know, staunch faith in the guru, that is also not good. I mean, we cannot be fanatic. Okay, so we have to see the reality also. Right? Nitya Siddha devotee can never do anything wrong. He can never commit mistake. Okay. But a conditioned soul, the chance he can commit mistake also. Right? Mm-hmm. So we cannot be blind about it. And
hey, Prabhuji, I'll tell you something, like long back I remember, you know, there used to be a devotee who would come to me and complain and criticize so many people. And then no matter how much I would tell the devotee, don't say all these things, doesn't matter, and all, the person would not listen. Then, you know, I sort of asked the senior about it and said, what do I do? Because I have to hear it. How do I handle the situation? So then he didn't give me much advice. He just said, okay, try to avoid this thing and all, but didn't give me much advice. But then I told him that it's very confidential. I don't want her to get into any trouble or anybody to know about it. It's just a personal thing. But then that person went and told it in public during the pravachan, you know, and I somehow didn't like it. Because I came home and I did tell my husband that I did not like it. I personally requested that it should not be told. I didn't want to say anything bad about it. It was a personal thing that I'm facing. So I wanted a senior to guide me. But then instead of guiding me, it was told in public. So now, you know, I always go with the guilt that I have done a Vaishnava Aparadh by telling it to my Prabhuji, because I was feeling bad that time. I told him, see, I didn't like this thing. But beyond that, I told nobody. But then that guilt feeling is there, that because I shared it with my husband, I have committed Vaishnava Aparadh.
So it is, it depends on, like, you know, who was wrong and, you know, what was the intensity.
Like, either I had to just keep quiet and not speak about it at all. But then after that, I just speak about it to anybody. But then these are little things that happen in life. And then you really don't know whether it's a Vaishnava Aparadh or not. Because as such, we are not blaspheming anybody or trying to belittle somebody.
Yeah. I mean, see, generally blasphemy is taken seriously when you purposefully, intentionally, with the motive of envy, or
that is
some,
not there.
Then you do. But generally, what is happening is, you know, most of the devotees, majority of the devotees, they are acting because of their nature. You know, it's not even about Vaishnava etiquette as such. You know, I will tell frankly that, first of all, many devotees, they don't even know Vaishnava etiquette, how one should behave. And I would say that, you know, most of the devotees, they are acting because of their own nature. It is nothing to do with Vaishnava etiquette also. So now, devotees...
we don't know whether we are committing aparadh in the middle. That is the main thing.
That is the reason we have, you know, you have guru and he's supposed to guide you and give you the training and knowledge, and you are supposed to accept it. And that's how, you know, the entire spiritual process works. It's not just about, you know, connecting yourself to a sannyasi guru or, you know, a big personality in ISKCON, you know, who has made a lot of disciples. It's about, you know, taking training, you know, taking knowledge regularly and in trying to implement that knowledge.
Yeah. Like Prabhuji, you right now you are one of my Shiksha Gurus. Now what would you say? Have I committed an offense or is it an offense? When I come and just tell my spouse, okay, such thing happened, I didn't like it. Is it an offense?
No, I don't think, to share with someone, even if, let's say, even if you are not right, okay, but to just share with someone, I don't think it's an offensive thing or something. You are just like venting out your anger or you are just venting out your thoughts and everything. So, but obviously we have to meditate also and we have to think about it, that was it my mistake? Was it other person's mistake? What happened exactly? And, you know, so if you think that it was your mistake, then you have to, and if you did something to that person, if you openly insulted that person in front of everyone, or you shouted on that person. So I'm just giving an example. I'm just giving an example that if you are doing such things, then definitely you have to beg for forgiveness. But if you have not done anything, even if you are at fault, if you have not done anything, you can still share with, you know, your devotee, intimate devotees, you know. So that is not an offense actually. But the idea is that, you know, the devotees are supposed to also give you the right advice. So it is not that, okay, you come to me and you express to me, this happened, you know. And so you don't expect that I will tell you that, okay, whatever you did, don't worry about it. And it was okay, it was all right, you know. So it's not like that. The devotee has to understand what is the situation and he has to give the right knowledge. Advice that, okay, you are the one who actually did not behave properly. The opposite person was actually right. So, you know, a real friend, the honest friend will actually give the right advice. He will not say, okay, see, many devotees, they will just, because of sentimentalism, they will say, okay, don't worry, everything will happen good. But, see, we are not here to do that kind of thing. That, again, that is a, you know, sentimentalism. You have to say the right thing, you know, you have to convey. So if that, you know, because by doing this, you are also getting entangled in that mistake, you know, you are also committing that mistake actually. By supporting the devotee, you know, if it is their mistake, by acknowledging that, you are also taking a part in that. So it is not right actually to do that, but you have to actually correct, you know, you have to give the right thing, right advice. So that is also very important. So we share, you know, to others and they will also share and they will also give advice. We also give advice. That is exchange in a relationship.
Yeah, so that means this, it's such that my sharing does not tantamount to Vaishnava.
No. See, again, you know, now if you are sharing with some Mataji certain things so that you can convince her that, you know, she should not speak to that devotee or she should, you know, because of envy or because of some kind of personal motive. Let's say, for example, if you are not comfortable with a particular devotee, so then you go to your friends and you also tell everyone that don't speak to that devotee. Now, that is obviously not the right way. If they are... one thing is there, if you find diplomacy in a person, if you find some kind of, personal motivation in a person, and if you go and share with your friend, that is fine, that is right. But if you, without any genuine, just because you are not comfortable with that devotee, but that devotee does not have any diplomacy or personal motivation, and then even after that you go and tell others that keep distance from this devotee, then it is not the right thing.
Those things, I just wanted to know, because this is something, you know, that keeps on bugging me. It happened long back, but I always think whether I've committed
this is also, all these things are very practical, you know, routine, day-to-day basis, because it also happens that, you know, sometimes we complain about devotees to non-devotees, okay, in a relationship, like in a close relationship. So we also, you know, point out faults of devotees and we tell them. So now, I think that can be avoided. If someone is from outside and we are pointing out the devotee's faults, let's say, for example, we go to the Dham and then we meet different devotees, and the devotees, they are running rickshaws and everything, so we take a ride through them, and they bargain and they argue about Lakshmi, and they become angry, and then we are with non-devotees. Okay, so now we also feel that, okay, the devotees are taking too much. Okay, and obviously the non-devotee will say about it. So, because for them, it does not, they don't think that there is any difference between devotee and non-devotees. They don't have the discrimination power. So, for them, it is like everyone is a materialistic person. Devotees are like, okay, they are worshipping. But in fact, if devotees will do something wrong, then they'll get more angry on them. Because they think that, okay, devotees mean they should be perfect. Their expectation like that. So now, when we are in the Dham with non-devotees, and some devotees, like, behavior is not proper, then, okay, we can identify, and we can just say that, this devotee is, I agree that he should have behaved in a proper way. But I think we should not go beyond that. So we cannot say that, devotees are like that only, it's their nature. Some devotees are like that only. I think that extrapolation has to be avoided. But reality has to be there. Reality is reality. So you cannot, because actually really it means that, devotees should be ideal in their behavior. That is also right. And, if you do something wrong in public assembly, then we can't expect that, okay, all the devotees will come and tell us that, okay, you have done the right thing. Obviously, wrong is wrong. If I break a regulatory principle, that is not, everyone is going to,
No, I just was confused, so I thought I'd clarify with you. We share with somebody if it is.
And it is also true that sometimes devotees' behavior will bother us more than a non-devotee's behavior. Because non-devotees are, at least we can overlook their faults, thinking that, okay, at least they are not devotees. So obviously they are like that only, and there is no scope of improving. But with devotees, at least we have some expectation and hope that they will improve, in their behavior. So sometimes we get more frustrated with devotees rather than non-devotees. And then we go and share with the non-devotees also, obviously in a relationship, not as an unknown person. So, but, the intention is not to put down any devotee. We do understand that, internally, every devotee is in, taking shower, and some devotees are, they take quick shower, some will take long time. But you have to be realistic also. I mean, in the devotee community, probably you will understand, everyone understands that, okay, we should not see the faults in them. But in an outside community, if you try to do that, and so then you have to be consistent. Then even if challenges will come upon us, we should be able to tolerate that. We should be able to see the good in everyone. Then the consistent behavior will attract them. Otherwise, what will happen? Today you said something, and then after a few days, you will be saying something completely different.
Yes.
According to your, because, see, everyone behaves according to how people react with them.
Yes.
So our behavior is more dependent on how circumstances and surroundings, they respond to us. That is how we actually respond like that. But really speaking, devotee is actually one who is not dependent on the circumstances. His behavior is always consistent.
That is the best.
And see, another point is that, okay, even if a devotee is very advanced, but then as a matter of duty, he has to do certain things. Like, for example, when the Kali personified, he was in the form of a king, and he was, trying to attack the bull, right?
Yeah.
So that time Parikshit Maharaj, the bull was giving explanation to Parikshit Maharaj that, well, who is the cause? And he was saying that, well, the Supreme Lord is the cause, ultimate cause. And so no one is at fault. The bull is explaining to Parikshit Maharaj, and Parikshit Maharaj, does accept it. Whatever philosophy he said, he acknowledges that. But at the same time, after this, entire conversation, he is picking up the sword, he is ready to kill that Kali.
Yes.
So now, okay, Parikshit Maharaj is also Uttama Adhikari. The bull is also at a very high platform. Okay, both are talking about philosophy, they are accepting. But then, okay, you don't see any cause, then why are you trying to kill the Kali personified? Why are you trying to kill Kali? Right? Because the Supreme Lord is a cause and he has sentioned that. So then why, but you know, you have to act because you have to, it's your duty. If you don't act, then the future generations will suffer. So that is the role of a king. That is the role of a Kshatriya. Right? Yudhishthira Maharaj, Pandava also, they fought the war. And then at the end, Yudhishthira Maharaj says that, well, I am responsible for everything. Just for my own sense gratification, you know, I had to kill all my family members. So what is that? So didn't you realize this before? Why are you talking about this after the war? So it is obviously after the war, you know, his natural humility is there. And you know, he is following Krishna's instruction. You know, he is doing his duty as a king. So similar, you know, all the pure devotees, the Prahlad Maharaj, look at Prahlad Maharaj also. Look at Dhruva Maharaj also. Dhruva Maharaj, he had killed so many yakshas just to save his brother. Someone who saw Vishnu, after seeing Vishnu, one will want to kill people. So you know, it was Vishnu's desire that he continue his kingdom, and so he did that as a matter of duty. So, and then we have, you know, throughout the Shastra, we see examples of Dima Asuras who are acting, you know, very, you know, in a very Asuric way, you know, like in the mode of ignorance. And then every Asura, you know, the Lord is giving them chances, the devotees give them chances. But finally, you know, they finish them. The Lord is specially coming for that. So the role of the Lord, one of the roles is that he is coming to annihilate the demons. Right? And the devotees also do the same thing. They also establish dharma. So in each and every yuga, in spite of the Bhagavad Gita being an eternal principle, it's teaching about we are not the body, we are the soul. One should learn to tolerate happiness, distress, cold and wind, you know, summer and cold. You know, all these things are there. The Bhagavad Gita talks big things about tolerance and all that. But finally, what is the ultimate outcome and result? Arjun did not just, you know, he was not seeing the soul that time. He was fighting and he was actually killing all of them. Why? Because he had to establish dharma. So that was his service that time. So similarly, the duty of, and now in this Kali Yuga, we are not Brahmanas, we are not Kshatriyas, we are not Vaishyas, but we are Shudras, maybe less than Shudra also. So now, what is our role? What is our, how we are supposed to act in situations? And when we combine devotional service with that, the etiquettes with that, then we are neither here nor there. Because internally we cannot forgive. That is, you know, it is burning in the heart when we will take revenge. And externally we are just, okay, no problem. I did not mind. It's okay. You know, like, so the external things are going on, but internally we are burning. We are expecting more, right? So this is our condition. And that is the reason, you know, it is best to act according to our stature. So at least try to come to Madhyama platform. Now, Uttama is probably very difficult state, but Madhyama at least we can try to discriminate. And so we try to avoid association of those devotees who are creating disturbance or who are not favorable for our bhakti. Maybe they might be good devotees in, you know, themselves, but probably their behavior is not, we are not able to, advance in their association, you know, because they disturb our mind whenever we meet them. So such devotees, we have to keep distance. Yeah. And you see, even as a, now coming to the, you know, third kind of situation where a guru is actually pointing out the faults of a disciple to another disciple. Okay. So that also happens, you know, or a guru is actually criticizing a Vaishnav to his disciples or to his godbrothers. You know, we have seen in Prabhupada's case also, he was, you know, very severely chastising his godbrothers. We know that. You know, very heavily he has chastised them. And he has also heavily chastised his disciples. And he has also spoken about his disciples to other disciples. So now, this is a very critical situation. Obviously, Prabhupada was perfect in everything. So he could manage everything very nicely. And he obviously, because of his responses, it was a teaching for all of us, you know, how a guru is supposed to act. But when it comes to us, it is kind of critical also, because, you know, we don't actually understand and we don't realize certain things which are very important. So maybe certain times you are right about a particular devotee, you know, who is like our, who is like a junior, you know, we are guiding a junior, and, you know, so we might see certain things about the junior, we might express that to some other devotee also. And it is, you know, sometimes it becomes like necessary, because I think, you know, when you have disciples or when you have many devotees under you taking guidance, then, you know, because they are unable to see certain things, they are very inexperienced, immature, so they are not able to see certain things. And that is why maybe, you know, for some superior purpose, for higher purpose, the guru might say something. He might also openly chastise, insult a disciple. Yeah, it all depends. You know, like, again, you know, the basic point is that what is the purpose of that? Are you doing it, you know, because of your own sense education for your ego? Or are you doing it so that, you know, the devotees will advance? Yeah, so it is all, you know, difficult to say certain things, you know. I mean, because there can be fault from guru's side also. There can be fault from the disciple side also. I mean, mostly it is from the disciple side, because they are very immature and inexperienced. They do not know certain things which the senior devotees they have seen. You know, like okay, one more thing is, you know, the toughest challenge is, you know, as being a teacher or a guru, is I think that when the disciples, they don't reciprocate properly, you know, then it hurts, basically. Because, and then obviously the guru will just express to their, you know, the most sincere student that, you know, this is how it should be, and this is how, because, you know, okay, so many neophyte devotees are there. You know, and the, obviously guru means generally, you know, he's supposed to be obviously more elevated than his students. So then certain things, you know, he wants to all of them to at least come to a certain standard. He's expecting that. But only one or two of them, you know, they are following that, and others are not following. So obviously he will share his frustration with his, you know, other two that rare students. And then obviously in that process, you know, it's like basically the students will come to know about other students, you know, what they are doing, what they are supposed to do and all. So it's that's a very delicate thing. because we never know, you know, the two students, they are sincere, supposedly sincere, they might probably become insincere after some time. Or they might show their true colors after some time. So then it becomes very complicated for the guru. Yes. So like initially he's sharing with them about other disciples. But then later on, you know, when they are kind of not committed to the guru, then the guru starts speaking about them to others. And so it's a trap, you know. It's a very complicated situation. But in any case, you know, I think any guru would want that the disciples should be happy in their Krishna consciousness, and they should advance. They should advance, basically. And if that is not happening, then obviously it's a concern. So then how does he express the concern? That's a very challenging thing. Because not every disciple is going to accept it. Like, you know, we also, like I have experienced, and then many other devotees experience, that the moment you start chastising someone, or the moment you start correcting someone, the devotees will go, you know, they will start reverting back. And at some point of time, you know, they will just leave it. Just because they are unable to take that chastisement.
Yes.
Or correction. Yeah, the problem is that too much familiarity. You know, again, you start thinking that, okay, it's okay, you know, if I don't do this, if I don't do that, it is quite okay. It's a normal thing. Others are also doing. So why can't I also do? That also become, that becomes, start becoming, it becomes a norm then. So then again, you know, certain things has to be imposed. Otherwise, very difficult.
Yes.
It's very tough. It's very tough.
I know, it's
to
very tough.
Manage, like, see, I will tell you from my experience. The more you keep distance, the more the devotees are happy and they are satisfied. The more you try to, you know, get involved in their spiritual affairs, you know, the more they feel like negative about it. They don't want to, because the problem, what happens is, you know, we can easily, I mean, you know, the guru can easily find out the faults and he can point it out. So there, that's where majority of the devotees, they step back. And that's the reason, you know, there are very rare devotees who will actually stick to the guru's association. And, you know, as like Prabhupada used to say, that if you want to associate with fire, you have to be like fire. Otherwise, you'll get burned.
Yes.
Yeah, so these are some of the different, you know, angles of vision, how we can actually relate. Every situation is different. So, but in general, you know, everything boils down to intention. And, you know, when you are in a relationship, like, you know, if you are a teacher, then you have to think from that point of view. And you have to, you know, we have to be, you have to be truthful, you have to be honest. You cannot flatter the disciples also all the time. You cannot just keep praising them all the time. Okay? You have to be honest. Certain times, if you think, you know, the disciple is taking advantage, or then you have to be very honest with them. Because ultimately, you know, we have to know that we are not dependent on the students if they are thinking like that, but we are dependent on the Supreme Lord. And so we are not, if you don't want followers, then you have to depend on Krishna. If you want to depend on followers, then you just keep flattering them.
Mm-hmm.
Say, only say good things about them all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Wherever they want to go, whatever they want to do, yeah, good thing. Good Prabhuji, good Mataji, yeah, wonderful. Keep doing. So, you know, that kind of diplomatic behavior, you know, what is the meaning of that? There is no point of, you know, then what happens is shopping. Why should I go to a, you know, particular devotee? I can just keep going here and there. Whoever will fulfill my desire, whoever will agree with my views. That is the best devotee, best guide, mentor. So, see, it is basically about everyone wants to do what they want to do. That is the most majority of the motive of every devotee. They don't want to listen to anyone. That is for sure. So how do you expect, you know, when we are chanting the holy name, how do you expect that we are chanting Shudhanam? We are far from that. So, okay, you know, certain basic things we are following, regular principles, 16 rounds, Prabhupada said, yeah, that is okay. But then it does not stop there. If you really want to advance, chant Shudhanam, then you have to surrender to someone, which is extremely difficult. Okay. Yeah, so I hope, you know, this sheds some light on the question. I also wanted to share about, because, you know, the topic is, it has been connected to this. So, you know, about dealings with our different Gurujan. You know, I wanted to shed some light on that also. Yeah, so see, first of all, there is a short-term tendency that only Sannyasi Guru is whole and soul of everyone, and everything is dedicated to him only. Right? I think most of the devotees, they are coming up with this conception that if I will surrender, I will surrender everything to a Sannyasi Guru or the Diksha Guru. Rest other devotees, it's not necessary. You know, so, you know, lot of sacrifice, you know, intense sacrifice for the Diksha Guru, you know, but no sacrifice or very little sacrifice for the different Siksha Gurus. That is again incomplete. I know devotees, they will spend lakhs of rupees for their Diksha Guru, even if they don't have so much money. Or they will make a major contribution for their Diksha Guru project. But hardly they will think about the other devotees who are helping them. Or they will make a very little contribution. Now, does this make sense? I wanted to ask all of you, does this make sense? You are learning everything from someone on a regular basis, okay, and you want to contribute the most maximum to the guru who is traveling, and you know you are taking inspiration from him through his example on an absolute platform, and on a subjective platform you keep taking guidance from devotees, and you want to contribute the minimum for them. Does this sound illogical? I mean, you know, what is the Shastric intention? You know, see, when a sannyasi will come to the house, we'll arrange big car for them. Everything will be arranged. When our own, the Siksha Gurus will come, okay, you know, they will manage on their own. You know, it's okay. You know, everything is like, is this the right etiquette? We're talking about Vaishnava etiquette. Is this the right etiquette? And sometimes you don't even invite them to their house. You are eagerly waiting when the Diksha Guru will come. When he will come and when, you know, I'll get his association. And those devotees who are taking so much pain and, you know, helping, you know, so much, you don't even, you know, bother about them so much. Is this the right attitude? Obviously, no. The Diksha Guru might be more advanced, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
You know, they might be more advanced probably as a sannyasi or as a senior Vaishnava. But, you know, when it comes to taking regular association of the devotees who are helping us throughout our entire lives, so their position also becomes equal to the Diksha Guru. So technically, Shastra also says the same thing, that one should not discriminate between the Diksha and Siksha. one may offer them respect and worship according to their stature. That's a different thing. But what is the meaning? You know, you make all the arrangements. You want your guru to come through flight. You make all the bookings, arrangements, and you don't even invite your Shiksha Gurus. Well, not even once. Everyone is eager to make a big, big festival if some, you know, great Mahatma will come. But what about the devotees who are helping you? Have you ever thought about them? Have you made that kind of grand arrangement for them? So it is, you know, for all these things will also matter. And obviously, they are also serving Prabhupada. You know, we say that, okay, it's a Prabhupada movement. You know, Prabhupada is the center. So then what is the meaning of that? It's not just the Diksha Guru is serving Prabhupada. It is your Shiksha Gurus also who are serving Prabhupada. They are also trying to connect with Prabhupada. So, you know, it's actually, you know, I would say that the Shiksha Gurus are so important, because if they don't give Shiksha, then where you will go for Shiksha? Who will give you Shiksha? See, one more thing. Even for our online class also, you know, not my example, but let's say, you know, similar examples through the online class. If the same online class was being conducted by Radhanath Maharaj or Jayaprataka Maharaj or Radha Govind Maharaj or XYZ, I am pretty sure that devotees would go out of their way to make sure that they do everything properly. But the same thing, you know, when others are doing, yeah, okay, take it for granted, leisurely, okay, according to our convenience. What is the meaning of that again? So obviously, you know, the respect will differ. You know, there is no doubt about it. The respect that you give to Jayaprataka Maharaj and the respect that you give to other devotee, you know, any other devotee, that will have a big difference. But certain things are common, you know, like, and then you have a long-standing relationship with a, you know, teacher who is teaching you for, you know, many years, then the position of that teacher also becomes equally important. So, see, the thing is, why I'm sharing this is, you know, because the role of the Shiksha Guru has been neglected for so many years. And so, generally, they are not at fault. You know, they are doing their best to help others, but what they are getting in return is the minimum. Minimum standard they want, you know, the students want to follow for the Shiksha Gurus, but maximum standard for Diksha Guru. So, you know, Guru Tattva is actually including Shiksha and Diksha both. You don't expect, okay, you know, even if your Diksha Guru will come and smile at you, but if you don't give proper treatment to your Shiksha Gurus, Krishna has noticed that, you know, he is the supreme Guru Tattva. It's not that, you know, just by your the Diksha Guru's glance or, you know, smile, you know, you'll advance in your spiritual life. It is a holistic process. You have to make sure that your Gurujans are pleased. It's not about just one Guru. And then ultimately, you have to also see the connection. See, the Shiksha Gurus are also trying to connect you more, taking you more deep towards the Diksha Guru or to Prabhupada, right? So in that sense also, they are playing a very important role. Otherwise, what will happen? You just keep taking Shiksha from someone, and then the relationship is not yet established also. Who is that? Okay, so someone will come and ask you, okay, so what is your relationship with that Prabhuji? You know, you are attending, you know, so many classes, seminars and all that. Oh, well, you know, we are just seeking knowledge. That's it. He is just helping us. There's, you know, there is no stand here or there. So it's a very embarrassing situation for the Shiksha Guru also, that they are taking this kind of position where they are nowhere. So all these things will matter also. It is not just about one's own sadhana. Obviously, you know, the guru does not expect anything, but you know, at least certain things has to be there. So we have, I mean, you know, learning the shastras, you know, and if you are missing the most important principle, if you have not understood that, then there is no point actually of discussing about, you know, Chaitanya Charitamrita and all these shastras. So yeah, I mean, you know, don't minimize the, you know, the Siksha Gurus who are helping in ISKCON. In fact, they are the hopes only, you know, because see, I can very well understand this, you know, why? Because I know that my Guru Maharaj, he does not speak to his disciples so much. He does not guide them personally. So I can really understand their importance and, you know, the position of Siksha Gurus. They are the ones who are actually sustaining and nourishing us in Krishna consciousness. Without them, you know, where will we go? That is the most important question. And that is the reason I feel very proud of my Guru Maharaj also, that you know, somehow I think, you know, he's quite visionary in that, you know, because he understands that, and he is very detached, that, you know, he understands that all his disciples, they are not going to be connected to him forever, and so he wants to make them independent also, you know, by obviously independent means, you know, being dependent on the shelter of the different devotees who are, you know, representing Prabhupada. And by doing that, you know, he has actually instilled in us the faith and the conviction that we can sustain in our Krishna consciousness even after he leaves the material world. I feel proud about it, you know, and that's a really wonderful thing, you know, because that is going to help us in the future for a long run. Now, being away from Maharaj's personal association for such a long time, obviously we become more and more aware of the importance of the devotees who are, you know, guiding and helping in spiritual life. Plus, it's not, you know, it's not that, okay, we are only, you know, fixed on a particular person, you know, because Krishna consciousness is actually, you know, it's a variety, you know, like you can go anywhere, and whatever lacking you have, whatever you relish in Krishna consciousness, you know, if you are getting from somewhere, you can still get it. It's not that, okay, I have to wait for my Guru Maharaj to come and give it to me. So that thing, you know, like we have learned. So it's a wonderful experience. And we have learned the most important lesson, and you know, that's the reason Maharaj is always exemplary for his Vaishnava seva, you know, mood. Always, you know, always glorifying devotees, always emphasizing the point that we should always try to serve the devotees. We should always try to take guidance of superiors. You know, be with the servant of servant of servant. So that thing, you know, is actually able to connect us more deeply in Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, how many days can we sustain? And you know, to be realistic, how many of us can actually take the association of the Diksha Guru also? It's very difficult. You will not be able to sustain for a long time because they are very advanced. That is the fact. How many of us can do that? You have to surrender. You know, your surrender level has to be really high if you want to associate with these advanced Vaishnavas. So, you know, the Siksha Gurus are also, you know, via medium, they are also an instruments to bring us, you know, a gradual elevation so that we can progress and, you know, we can actually understand what is really Guru, what the Guru wants. It you know, it can happen gradually. So, very, very important. Yeah, so, you know, see, obviously the Siksha is of different types, as you know. Someone can give you siksha for 5 minutes. Someone can give a Bhagavatam class. You hear that. Someone can give one seminar and you hear that. You get inspired by that. Someone can tell you certain things which will you remember forever in your life. Or some devotee might have spent only just, you know, half an hour with you, but whatever conversation, you know, it has helped you throughout the life. So siksha can be of different types. It all depends on the devotee, how they take it. Right? You know, but still, you know, it's very important, this relationship. And ultimately, our parampara is siksha parampara. So, you know, the tendency or the concept that, okay, I will only hear and follow when my diksha guru will come and tell me, you know, that is completely, you know, contrary to the principles of Guru Tattva. Right? I mean, does this make sense? Huh? Yeah, Srila Prabhupada is preeminent siksha guru because we are all following his teachings. So, obviously, you know, Srila Prabhupada is actually the acharya. He is more than a guru also, in one sense, because he is the managing authority of ISKCON, ultimate authority of ISKCON. He is more than a guru also, you know. So, yeah, but all these, you know, subtle things, fine points, you know, very, very important. You know, see, as you advance in spiritual life, you know, you'll start paying attention to these finer details also. So, one will come to this realization that, okay, you know, till now, the Diksha Guru, Diksha Guru, Diksha Guru. No, but it's not like that. It's a unifying principle. Obviously, the Diksha Guru is also inspiring us from the Absolute Platform because he's instructing his lectures, his personal example. That itself is a big inspiration for all of us, no doubt about it, right? Now, you know, what Jayaprakash Maharaj is undergoing, you know, or Radha Govind Maharaj is also undergoing, you know, so that their experiences, without even getting their physical association or without personal association, just by their example, you know, we get that inspiration. And obviously by their teachings, by instructions and all that. But you know, it is, yeah, I mean, they are playing a very important role. And at the same time, you know, both of them, you know, so we have to recognize and realize that without the instructions of, you know, the subjective instructions of the Siksha Guru, it's very difficult to fulfill our requirement in Krishna consciousness. And without the, you know, ideal and absolute example of the Diksha Gurus, it is that you know, there is something which is incomplete. So both complement each other. Right? Does this make sense? Yeah. So Vinita Madhavi, are you there?
Yes, Prabhuji, yes, I'm there.
Okay, and who else is there?
No one is there.
Yeah, Hare so Krishna. See now, Hare Krishna,
Radhika.
You are able to join now?
Radhika. Okay, she joined again. Okay. She said that I'm trying to join but not able to connect.
So when did you join?
Yeah, I connected long back, but okay. I forgot to message. You were talking.
Okay. Yeah, so see, some devotees, they had message that Tuesday is good for them. But they did not turn up. So now obviously, you know, it's not good. Because like, you know, see, now I really appreciate that Chintamani Sakhi Mataji, Monday and Saturdays, she has allotted special time for the class. Okay. And obviously I do not feel good that whenever there is a change of schedule, because Tuesday she is not able to attend. But still, today, you know, she was able to attend. So I thought, okay, let's do it on Tuesday. But then, see, obviously, you know, we want that maximum devotees can join. You know, because, see, what will happen is, if this becomes a regular thing, then definitely it's not good. Because then this is, I really don't like this recording system.
Yes.
I don't really like this, you know. I mean, I obviously do have concern about those devotees who are regularly hearing or attending online live. For them, recordings is definitely important because sometimes obviously they are unable to attend. But then I know the tendency, what is going to be, what is going to happen with the recording thing. And so two main reasons. First of all, for those devotees, who are sincere and sometimes they are not able to attend, so they will obviously need to hear. And second thing is, I have to send the recordings to ISKCON Society also. Because it's a series, like the Bhagavad Gita is, a flow, verse by verse, chapter by chapter. So I want to do that. But at the same time, I feel that, this recording should not be there only. Because long-term commitment means, very difficult. Somewhere or other will have some kind of priorities, this thing, that thing. And so I wanted to make sure, at least there are 4 or 5 devotees attending, then what happens, then Chintamani Mataji is unable to attend. She has reserved Saturday for us, our Bhagavad Gita class. And then when we change to Sunday, then, she has a program on Saturday. She is unable to go. I mean, she does not go because of the Saturday class. And then if we have the class on Sunday, then again she has to sacrifice another day. So I don't like, that she has to do it. But, still, if there are only 2-3 devotees, and, specifically happened Gudi Padwa because there were only few devotees, 2 or 3 devotees who were able to attend. And so Sunday was a, better option. Yeah. So, yeah, these things are all, very subtle things, very important things. Even Vinita Mataji also, you are attending very regularly. Only sometimes, you are not able to attend. And at least the devotees who are in the group now, they are kind, they are regular in their attendance. But prior to this, we had so many devotees. I think Vinita Mataji knows we had around 35 devotees for Bhakti Samrita.
Oh, yeah, Prabhuji, of course. Yeah.
And then, so many of them left and they were not so regular attendees. So then there was no point. So it is not about, the number, but it is about the devotees who are very sincerely eager. They want to hear, they want to share.
Okay. Prabhuji, one question. Is there any chance of starting CC Madhya Leela?
We'll see, how it goes. Maybe after 1 or 2 months.
Okay.
Yeah. So, okay, any other question?
No.
Radhika Kishori, do you have any question?
No.
Yeah. I think all the devotees should take the teaching experience. They should become teachers. They should guide other devotees. I think many things they will understand from that experience. Not just in terms of experience, but in terms of understanding their own level of Krishna consciousness understanding. How much depth they have about their Krishna consciousness philosophy. From that point of view, it's also very important. When you teach others, then actually you understand what you know. How much is your conviction? How much philosophically you are convinced? So that's the reason, you know, Prabhupada actually, when he expected everyone to preach, you know, I think he was perfect, you know, in his instructions, because this is so important. Now, it will take you to another dimension altogether. I mean, I do understand that certain devotees are reserved introverts, but what do they want? You know, like, I mean, are they concerned about their Krishna consciousness? Do they want to know what level they are at? Or are they always satisfied, you know, wherever they are at? So for them, all of them, you know, it's very important that we teach what we have heard and learned. First of all, discussing Shastra, how much we remember, that is another point. So, do we just want to focus on the Leelas? Yeah, it is, you know, nectarian, it is like very blissful to hear about the Lord's Leela. But then, is it about hearing about the Leelas, or is it about taking some responsibility? It's all about service, finally. So, we should not divert from the main intention of discussing Shastra or any other activity. How many of us contemplate and think about how much we have to implement? We have read so much, we have discussed so much, heard so much, but how many of us, we think, we contemplate about what we have heard, you know, that we must try to execute? So, you know, the more we discuss, the more we realize that we are far from devotional standard, far from even being a devotee, actually. We are just in our own world, happy, satisfied. You know, even Krishna consciousness also, we only do that much which gives us satisfaction and happiness. After that, it becomes a, you know, maybe boring or too much. So basically, what we realize is that all we want is peace. We don't want service. We are basically Mayavadis. That is the conclusion. Does everyone agree?
No, wait.
Huh?
Yes.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that is true. We are all Mayavadis, basically, in the guise of devotees. And then we talk big, you know, we criticize and chastise the Mayavadis also, like anything. But we ourselves are actually Mayavadis.
We are Jedi Madai of this Kali Yuga.
Jedi Madai. Jedi Madai, they were at least, so, you know, very fortunate that they took up, they became devotees. We are not becoming devotees also. So see, the purpose of this question answer is to make sure that our conviction is built in representing Krishna consciousness to others, to devotees, to non-devotees. If anyone is asking you some questions, basic question, if you are not aware of that, then we should not face that embarrassing situation. We should be able to speak something. Logically also we can say something. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, you know, he has taken so much pain to write so much philosophy in the Adi Lila. We know that almost till the 12th chapter, first 12 chapters, he is only speaking about Tattva. And 13 chapter and then later chapters, just I think 5 chapters are there for Leela, but that also some overview is given. How much Tattva he has mentioned. Siddhant is given so much. Bhagavatam also, if you see, 9th canto and then 10th canto also. 10th canto is not about, you know, just Krishna Leela. It is also about Siddhant. So many statements in the Bhagavat 10th canto, which actually proves that Krishna is Supreme Personality of Godhead and he is not the impersonal truth. So many, you know, Shastric engine, like Siddhantic conclusions from all the scriptures. Yeah, so I guess that anyone has any comment, or I think someone was saying something.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So yesterday we were discussing with one person, like here, he's a non-devotee, like, so we were just discussing, like, what according to you is God. So he's a Christian person here in our apartments where we stay. So we were asked, and he knows about Krishna, we gave him book and everything, Bhagavad Gita. So he started reading Bhagavad Gita, he was just asking us few questions, like basic introduction he started and he was asking some questions. So then he was asking, what is the difference between Jesus and Krishna? And then he was saying that, for me, there is no difference between, like we told him difference, but for he was not convinced. So then he said, for me, there is no difference between Krishna and Jesus. Because for me, God is, we asked him, what according to you is definition of Supreme Lord? Or then he said, for me, God is life. When I see at any God, may it be Ram, Krishna or any incarnation or anything, Jesus or anything, I see some reflection or light coming. So for me, that light is Lord. And through that light, I feel grateful, I feel gratitude, I feel love. So how do we defend or how do we say? Then Prabhuji even said to him that light is, who is the ultimate source of this light? So he's like, yeah, ultimate source is Lord, God only, but for me, God is the light. So.
Yeah, you can tell him that, you know, you go to your house, you lock yourself in the room, and you always keep the light on, and you always stay in the room. So you realize God immediately. So basically, yeah, again, you know, Brahman, impersonal, you know, Mayavadi. Because they can't understand the transcendental characteristics and activities of the Lord. You know, he does not have a material body. So all this tattva is actually clear from the Srimad Bhagavatam. And does the light reciprocate? That is the basic question. Does the light reciprocate? What are you feeling? You know, the feeling. So then that means that the light is having some attribute. So what is the difference if I say that I you know, you believe in the light and I believe in a form, and both are associating with me. So why don't you accept the form also? The form is more personal, obviously. Light is...
He is like, it is not right to accept one form. And he's saying that if Krishna is the Supreme Lord, then Jesus knows it. And if Jesus knows it, Jesus will guide me to Krishna. So we told him, Jesus is already doing that. But it is your free will. He is even given you that free will that you have to accept it or no.
Yeah, so Jesus also said in the Bible that many things I am not revealing, you know, because people will not understand. So, and then Jesus did not give complete description of about God. He just spoke about heavenly planets. And he was mainly teaching about regulative principles. So that's why Prabhupada said that the followers of Jesus, they can only go to the heavenly planets. They cannot go to spiritual world.
Okay.
And then who is in heaven? What are they doing in heaven? That is not described anywhere.
No, means according to them, heaven is the last stage. According to them, heaven is the last stage.
And where is your God? You are saying about God, God, God. Who is your God?
There is no form for him for God. The form is only light.
So why you want to go to heaven? You can, that same thing you can observe here also. Everywhere you go in the sunlight, you know, God is there. Why are you concerned about going to heaven or attaining liberation? And it's a common sense thing that the light does not reciprocate. If he is saying that the light is reciprocating, that means the light is transcendental. So then when an impersonal thing can have transcendental attributes, then why can't a personal thing have a transcendental attribute? You can also, you know, believe that a form can also have transcendental attribute when a light can have transcendental attributes.
Okay.
It's a atheistic philosophy ultimately. Jainism, Buddhism, it's all atheistic. I mean, unnecessarily they have added the element of God, but actually they are atheist. And then obviously there will be, you know, questions that, so okay, you know, so basically, why light created you? What is the purpose? How are you into existence? Ask them. They will not be able to answer.
Yeah.
See, everyone is getting reciprocation. Because even Mayavadis also, if they cannot get reciprocation, then they will, how can they progress? How their conviction will become stronger? So they are also, you know, receiving the reciprocation according to the Shastri intentions. And that means that someone is controlling. So Jain people also believe that we all can become God and no one can actually control others. But just by the fact that they have a scripture which is dictating them to how to rule, how to live life, that itself means that scripture is coming from someone. And so it means that if you don't follow that, you will suffer. So it means that someone is controlling your life. So that is again contradictory. So in all the religions, someone is controlling, that's for sure. And then you can ask them, what are you going to achieve? after you die, what are you going to achieve in the light?
Yeah, but finally Jesus also had a form, no? If they think that Jesus Christ is God.
Yeah, so?
Finally, he also has a form. Yeah. He does not a light.
Yeah, then that person says that the only reason why I'm reading this Bhagavad Gita today is for me. Jesus is also, he's a person or he's a form, but I can see him as a light. And so I can see, similarly, I can see Krishna also as one of the light, supreme light. So he's like, I am reading
Bhagavad Gita. Who told him about the light thing? Where did he get this information?
I don't know.
Ask him this question.
He says, whenever I see at Lord, whenever I go to church at Jesus, whenever I see this book, I see photo of Krishna or I see any God, I don't see God. I see light coming. I see a golden light coming from that. Something.
So you ask him, why don't you see darkness? It is your own conception. This light and this light. And you ask him, which color light you see? Then you will say, okay, I see golden light. Now, then you ask him, why golden light? Why not red light? Black light? Black light, obviously, it's not there. But red light, white yellow light, white light, green light.
Yeah.
Why not all these lights?
Yeah.
I mean, nonsense and, you know, illogical. They will just create something to avoid certain things. Who told you about light? That is the first question. Is that your mental conception? Then your mental conception, who is going to believe? Even Jesus, I don't think that Jesus also spoke about light and all. He was more, you know, talking about love of God, chanting the names of God, going to the heavenly planets, enjoying. You know, so, I mean, maybe their ultimate philosophy might be impersonal, but I mean, I don't know, you know, if Jesus ever mentioned about, or he gave more emphasis to the light aspect. It's so sad, you know, that Hinduism is full of contradictory religions, contradictory paths. That's why so many Hindus, they don't even understand their own religion, culture, and then finally they will accept something else. You know, Hindus ka halat bahut kharab ho gaya hai Kali Yuga mein.
Really?
They don't have a stand also anywhere. देश के बारे में बात करते बहुत. अरे भाई, what is you are talking about your country? Country किसके लिए जाना जाता है? इंडिया किसके लिए जाना गया है? मटेरियल वेल्थ के लिए जाया क्या? नहीं. कौन से चीज के लिए? टेक्नोलॉजी किसके लिए इंडिया फेमस है?
रिलीजन एंड कल्चर.
तो वही तो आपको एक्सेप्ट नहीं करना है. और बड़ा इंडिया का आप बात करते हो, आप देशभक्ति की बात करते हैं, उसको रिजेक्ट करना है. यू आर बेसिकली बिकमिंग अनग्रेटफुल, यू नो, टू द कल्चर, एंड देन यू एक्सपेक्ट दैट Modi will come and, you know, he will do so many things for India. अरे आपका मोदी भी जो है ना, उसको स्ट्रेंथ कहाँ से आता है? It's because he is rooted in his spiritual values.
Yeah.
It's a different thing, you know. He is probably not following a particular thing, you know. that we don't know, because he goes everywhere. You know, whatever is connected to Hinduism, he will go everywhere. So he might not be rooted in a particular thing, but still, the values and all that, you know, is very much influenced by the Vedic culture and spirituality. Because he has understood at least one thing, that we are not the body, we are the spirit soul, and Atma ka kabhi vinash nahi ho sakta. So based on that, he has got the strength, you know, he is doing things. So he is kind of fearless to a certain degree. But who has given you that knowledge? So obviously Modi is doing, you know, he's promoting Vedic culture, that is a good thing. But then what about the Hindus? Ye naam pe naam ke liye sab Hindu hai sab log. खुद का कल्चर भी नहीं पता है, और ये जो भी हो रहा है ना अभी देश का सत्यानाश, मतलब यू नो नॉट टॉकिंग राइट नाउ, बट जो अभी तक हुआ है हो चुका है कांग्रेस के वजह से या फिर एक्स वाई जेड रीजन, वो सब एक्चुअली किसी के वजह से नहीं है, वो आपके वजह से है. बिकॉज ईच एंड एवरी हिंदू हैज गिवन अप देयर रिलीजन, दे हैव गिवन अप देयर स्पिरिचुअल कल्चर. They are more inclined towards materialistic things. They have rejected that. And that's the reason they are facing their own karma. Ye jo bhi hai, jo terrorism bhi ho raha hai, ya phir kuch bhi ho raha hai. It is, see, ultimately, the philosophy is perfect, you know, the Bhagavad philosophy, that, you know, the Lord is the supreme sanctioner and he is the ultimate controller and he is the cause of all causes. Because if you see from a neutral point of view, from a spiritual point of view, then even the terrorist attacks that happened recently or earlier or whatever incidents are happening, you know, the 2611 or Pulwama or, you know, whichever incident is happening, it is the result of our own karma. Now you tell me one thing, if all the Hindus, if they had strong faith in their own culture, in religion, would any, you know, now obviously they, like earlier, you know, we used to give vote to the Congress people and we were not aware of things, you know, about the Congress, how they are closely connected with Pakistan also. So, naturally, when we are electing someone and we are, you know, electing with blind faith or maybe with some kind of misdirected faith, we are electing someone and then, you know, the government is responsible for that. Now, just imagine if the entire Hindu culture, Hindu people and the India would be united to fight against terrorism or to fight against non-Vedic culture, then things would have been completely different. Because they don't have faith in their own culture, or they show a big, big faith outside, from outside, external point of view, when it comes to, you know, Desh Bhakti, they will speak about, you know, big, big things about hamare culture mein to ye hai, hamare culture mein wo. But aapne kaun se culture ko utha ke aapne implement kiya hai, ya phir aapne, you know, you have made a special attempt, sacrifice or effort to understand your culture and to teach to your generations. Have you done that? You speak big, big things about your culture. India ka koi comparison nahi hai. India mein ye hai, India mein wo hai. Ye jo bhi family values aa rahe hai, ye sab India se hi aa rahe hai. Jo relationships hai, these etiquettes and everything, it's all coming from India. But then, you know, are you able to, you know, can you see that? So, that's unfortunate, you know. Hindus are completely misdirected now because of rejecting their own culture. Okay, anyways. So, any other comment or question?
One last question. So, in general, I'm asking, like, ISKCON is all over the world. So there are many different deities in all temples. Like one is known as Radha Gopinath, one is Radharas Bihari, Rukmini Tarkari. Different forms of Radha Krishna in different temples. So if you are attracted to one particular form or one particular deity, is it wrong? Or we are not attracted to some other deity particularly. So is it wrong?
See. Okay, now I wanted to ask the devotee's opinion on this. What do you think, Vinita Mataji, Chintamani Mataji?
What, Prabhu? I got disconnected.
Yeah, so Radhika Kishori, can you ask the question again?
Yeah, so I asked, like, we have different, all over ISKCON, we have different deities of Radha Krishna. Like, some is in form of Rukmini Dwarkadesh, some is in form of, like, Gopinath, some is Radha Raj Bihari, then Radha Giridhari, Radha Madan Mohan. We have different deities and different forms. It's the same Lord, but in different forms or different avatars. So, everyone has their own features and own own speciality. But ultimately, it's all Krishna. So, liking one particular form or one particular deity, is it wrong? Or differentiating between the two?
No, it's not wrong. Because Lord is reciprocates as per your desire. That's what he's saying, na? Yathamam prapadyante aham tathaiva bhajamyaham. So, in whatever form you are trying to see him, he's going to reciprocate accordingly. So, he is having different forms because he is unlimited. So, as per the devotee's wish, whether they want to see him as Dwarkadish Krishna or they want to see him as Raj Krishna or they want to see him as Vasudev Krishna or whatever it is. So, accordingly, he will reciprocate. That is why we have so many deities because he's unlimited and he reciprocates with the devotee's wish and desire. As so you can be fixed in whichever deity you like, whether it's Radha Shyam Sundar or it's Radha Gopinath or Raj Bihari. Each is showing his different qualities and his different moods. As Gopinath is the he's the master of the gopis. As Dwarkadish, he's a sort of Aishwarya Bhav, he's the king. Then in Gopinath, he's the cowherd boy. So it depends on the devotee's desire to see him in what form they want to see him. At least that's what I gather.
Okay. Yeah, it's a good explanation. And Vinita Madhuri, are you there? Okay. I might also get disconnected probably because I think I joined around 9:20.
Yeah, I got disconnected. So I joined back. Even some people want to be, they don't want Golok Vrindavan. They are happy with Vaikuntha. Like you have the Sri Sampradaya and all those. They are happy. You go and tell them about Golok, they are not interested. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, actually, we might get attracted with a particular form of the Lord. But it's not necessary that the attraction is only dependent on the looks. It may also depend on the relationship. You know, like, you might be in a particular temple. It might not be your most favorite deities, your most beautiful deities that you can perceive. But because you are in the temple, you are serving the temple, so you develop a relationship with that deities. And that's how actually you get attached to the deities or attracted to the deities. So attraction can also come through service. I think any devotee who is staying for a long time in a particular temple, they are connected to that deities. So they will definitely have that natural inclination attachment. But as far as the form is concerned, obviously every devotee, they will have different perception, you know, about. Some deities will be obviously more important, most important, because, you know, the form and everything is also manifested in a different way. So they might get attached to a different form of the Lord. Yeah, so, like, you know, I think in one letter Prabhupada had written to one disciple that all these deity forms in our temples, they are like eternally situated in spiritual world also. So deity form in the sense that, you know, because it is not different from the Supreme Lord, so they are all in the spiritual world also, the forms that we see in the deity. I mean, you know, it is like more of, let's say, you know, if a devotee is attracted to a particular form and he can appreciate Krishna more or the most in that particular form, then I think in the spiritual world also, he will see that form. Because he has already established that rag with that form. And, you know, so if he sees something different than that form, then it might, I mean, it might, you know, create some kind of incompatibility, like, you know. Because we know that Krishna is also present in the deity. And to say that everyone sees the same Krishna, that is also doubtful. Because Krishna resonates according to the devotee's desire. And his, you know, his, so see, it is not even about surrendering more or, you know, something like that. Like different acharyas and different rasas, they see Krishna differently. And they exchange leelas also differently with the Lord. That's the reason we have commentaries of acharyas. They don't, everyone does not say the same thing about a particular leela. They give their own opinion, own understanding, or own realizations about Krishna's particular pastime. So it is not the same for everyone, because Krishna likes variety and every devotee is also individual. So it's probably, you know, I don't think that all the devotees would be seeing the same form of Krishna in spiritual world also. Yeah, they will, I think they will see, you know, the most beautiful form according to their perception. But still, like, you know, we know that Krishna is unlimited. So that's why I'm saying this, that he can, He can manifest in unlimited forms for unlimited devotees. So this is how, you know, philosophically I am speculating. But, yeah, but, you know, if I get some... One thing also I know that Brihad Bhagavatamrita also Sanatana Goswami mentions the same point. That, and Bhagavatam itself actually, you know, is mentioning that the form that you most appreciate, or that, you know, you are most attached to, that form the Lord will reveal to you. So the Lord is actually revealed to us in that form. And that is, you know, it is obvious. I mean, the, you know, entire life you are worshipping a particular form, thinking that this is the most beautiful form, and then suddenly Krishna will manifest a different form to you. Then obviously, you know, maybe, you know, okay, you can say that he might manifest much more beautiful form than that, you know. But I think Hare Krishna. Okay, yeah. Okay, anyway, you know, this is my understanding, and but I think there is some more technical proof required for this, like some shastric proof understanding about this, you know, because how you know what form the gopi saw of Krishna, that we don't know. Different gopis, if they are seeing different forms of Krishna, I mean, I don't know if I've come across that. So yeah, but it is, you know, nothing wrong in appreciating some forms more than other forms and having inclination for a particular form. That is obviously natural. But it also depends on the relationship. It also depends on the service. That will also decide.
Okay.
In fact, you know, sometimes I see it as a, like, you know, in terms of, like, for example, because Krishna is the ultimate guru, so samband abhidhay prayojan, you know, he also represents that. And so, you know, we can see the Lord as our siksha guru also. You know, if we are connected to a temple and we are rendering service, then obviously the deities in the temple, they are our siksha guru. And so, you know, some deities can be siksha guru for sambandha, some can be for abhidhaya, and then ultimate will be the prayojan. So, or prayojan means, you know, the final culmination of your, you know, sadhana bhakti, your ultimate desire to see the Lord in a particular form, that will be the prayojan deity also. So that also we can see. But still, you know, some points, certain things are not very clear. I am also trying to understand this phenomena, because it is mentioned that Krishna is most perfect in Vrindavan, and he does not leave Vrindavan also. So, and at the same time, we know that Krishna has his, the personal forms of the Lord are also unlimited. So it is not that, okay, even though outside Vrindavan, Krishna's expansions are going, but at the same time, Krishna is also personally present in the deity form, in the temple. So this is something that I have to, like, I mean, I'm also trying to find out how to reconcile this. You know, because ultimately our worshipable, you know, object is Krishna in Vrindavan. That is the ultimate object, right? So whichever form, whichever deity form, even though we might be attracted to any particular deity in any ISKCON temple, but obviously it should be connected to Vrindavan also. So the meaning is that that form has to be originally present in Vrindavan also. Yeah, I mean, so it is basically, you know, it can be personally be present, you know, Krishna is personally present. So that means that he is in the deity form, he is present, but he is present outside of Vrindavan. But he will manifest that form in Vrindavan That can be one meaning. Or other meaning can be taken as, you know, that the deities in the temples, they are all expansions of the Vrindavan Shyam Sundar. Yeah, so these are two different, you know, situations, and I think I will get some more light, you know, already asked Bhanu Maharaj about it. Let's see. I mean, in my, I think, you know, in my understanding, the deity forms, they will, obviously, they will manifest in Vrindavan. Whichever form we are most attached to, inclined to, that will manifest in Vrindavan. Because obviously our desire is Vrindavan. Right? So that will be manifested. And I don't think that, you know, it's a common Krishna for all the devotees. That all the devotees will see one Krishna in Vrindavan. Because everyone will be attracted to a different form, feature of the Lord. But, you know, obviously I'm waiting for some kind of Shastric evidence. Otherwise, what will happen is, you know, the deity form in the temple, there will be a temporary manifestation. If you say that we see a common Krishna, all of us will see the same Krishna, the same form, feature, then it means that the deity form is a temporary form, just to facilitate our service to the Lord. It cannot be the eternal form. And this is what, you know, Prabhupada mentioned in the letter, that these are eternal forms in the spiritual world. So I would believe like that. That the forms that we are more attached to, you know, they will manifest in Vrindavan. Krishna will resurrect like that. Okay, any other comments? Yeah, I mean, you know, like, you know, how do you feel, you know, when you, if you are attached, if you are most, you know, intimately connected to Radha Ras Bihari, and when you go to Vrindavan, you see a different Krishna. So it will, you know, like, it will be, I mean, yeah, it's very strange. Okay, anyways, we'll, you know. So, Chintamani Mataji, any comment?
No, Prabhuji.
Okay, all right. So, we'll continue next class, next week.
Hare Krishna.
So, thank you, devotees, for joining. Hare Krishna, Dhanavad
Pranam. Hare Krishna,
Dhanavad
Pranam. Hare Krishna, Dhanavad
Pranam.
আজকে কত তারিখ? ১৬, না?